Hello and welcome to Studio Tulsa. Filling in for Rich Fisher, I'm Jason Heilman. My guest today is conductor Andres Franco, who's now in his fourth season as music director of the Signature Symphony at Tulsa Community College. Andres is one of the most promising up-and-coming conductors of his generation. In addition to directing the Signature Symphony, he also serves as associate conductor of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra and principal conductor of Caminos del Inca in Fort Worth. Earlier this season, he made his debuts with both the Dallas Symphony and the Omaha Symphony, and he'll return to conduct the Detroit Symphony later this spring. This weekend, Andres will conduct the Signature Symphony in a special concert that recreates the program from the orchestra's very first performance 40 years ago next month. Today, Andres is our guest on Studio Tulsa. Andres Franco, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Jason. Thank you for having me.
Well, your orchestra, the Signature Symphony, is celebrating its 40th anniversary this season, all season. That's a long run for an orchestra these days, isn't it?
Yeah, and we are very excited to be doing this season, our 40th, by presenting favorites from our audience. We had this survey in the fall of last year just trying to figure out what people wanted to hear, what their favorite artists, composers, themes were. And then we picked the top five on the classic side and the top five on the pop side. And that's what this entire season is going to be about, is giving our fans what they liked about the orchestra in the last 40 years.
Well, you've mentioned this 40th anniversary season that was chosen by the fans. What have been some highlights of the concert so far?
So we had already two concerts on the classic side and three concerts on the pop side. Mm-hmm. And some of the highlights have been we are also celebrating the 100th anniversary of Leonard Bernstein's birth. And our opening concert features some of his music. We will have a couple of other opportunities throughout the year to celebrate that very important centennial. The Signature Chorale will be performing a concert in March at the Sherwin Miller Museum of Jewish Art that is also going to be connected to a Bernstein exhibit. And we will also have in our Pops series, our Pops season finale is going to be the Bernstein and Robbins centennial. So that's also a celebration that is going along our 40th. My wife, Victoria Luperi, she's a clarinet player. She played one of Bernstein's pieces for clarinet and orchestra, and it was very successful. Something that I liked about one of our past classics concert was Eroica, Beethoven's Eroica. We came up with this new model where we perform only one piece in the concert. So the second half of the concert was Beethoven's Eroica. And then during the first half, we explored the symphony with live demos from the orchestra, with multimedia. And we just talked about why that piece is so important in the history of music, in the history of the symphony. So it was a great way for people who want to know more about the music they are about to hear to go and hear about the historical importance and also the musical importance. So we talked about, of course, Napoleon and what Beethoven did with the symphony. And then we had some demos so that they could follow the story, the musical story, so to speak, of Eroica. It was very well received, and I think we will be doing more of those concerts in the future.
Now, that's been one of your innovations since you've taken over as music director in the last 4 years, to add in these sort of concerts with commentary, or maybe call them sort of live introductions to the music. Is that something you're hoping to expand in the future?
Yeah, we actually started doing this with our Mahler project. Mm-hmm. So when we performed Mahler Symphony No. 1, I took some time during the first half of the concert to talk about the symphony and you know, to make sure that people know what is important about it and what to pay attention to. I always say enjoying music, you can show up to a concert and just enjoy the music without knowing anything. But if you want to deepen your relationship with the pieces, the more you know, the better it is. So we did that for Mahler 1, and we did that for Mahler 5 as well. And it worked very well. People said they love knowing more about the pieces. Even in the Pops concerts, I usually talk about mm-hmm. The pieces we're about to hear, the artist. And people seem to enjoy knowing more, so we decided, let's do one concert per this coming season, which is the current one. Mm-hmm. Let's do one concert where we actually focus on one piece. And it was very successful, so again, I think we're going to be doing more of those.
Well, you have coming up your actual official 40th anniversary concert. It has the title Bach and Sons, Inc. Could you tell us a little bit about this program?
Yeah, so this program was actually the very first program that the Signature Symphony ever performed. back in 1979. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a repeat performance of the same repertoire that was performed by the orchestra, which was known by a different name at the time, was the Tulsa Little Symphony, and eventually became the Signature Symphony. So people wanted to hear some of those original concerts that were performed. And it actually had been in my mind for a long time since I became music director that at some point I would love to repeat the first concert that they'd ever played. And as it happens, it is all dedicated to Bach and his family. And I joke his overextended family because we are adding P.E.Q. Bach, yes. Who is, of course, you know, not one of his sons. But I think it was a very clever way of putting these three composers together. And as it happens, Johann Sebastian Bach is my favorite composer. Mm. Like a lot of times in interviews, people ask me what my favorite composer is. And usually my answer is whoever I'm conducting or performing at the time, which is true. But if you were to push a little harder and tell me, no, but really, like if you have to pick one composer, definitely, hands down, Johann Sebastian Bach. So I'm very glad that our audience wanted to hear this particular concert. So it will feature music by Johann Sebastian Bach, one movement from his orchestral suite number 3, the Overture, the Brandenburg Concerto number 5, and Magnificat for choir, soloists, and orchestra. We will also have a symphonia written by one of his sons, Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach. And then we will also perform PDQ Bach's The Seasonings.
Let's talk about the PDQ Bach first, because that's a name that's become familiar, I think, to music fans over the years. That's well, I'll let you explain who PDQ is and how he fits into the whole Bach family tree.
So he's obviously not from the 18th century. He is a modern, I mean, a 20th century composer. And he's a musical satirist, I think is the way he's described the most. And as you can tell from this piece, he just likes having fun with classical music. So The Seasonings is actually a take on Haydn's The Seasons. And he writes music that is humorous, but is very well written. And it sort of pokes fun at classical music. So I think I liked that idea of having that piece, and that was part of the original program, just because I think for the Signature Symphony throughout its history, one of the most important elements of our concerts is that we are very audience friendly. We want you to feel comfortable when you come to our concerts. We don't want to have any barriers between the musicians and the audience. And we don't want people to think that classical music or orchestral music is just for a certain segment of the population. I personally believe that classical music is for everyone. And we try to make our concerts, all of them, very audience friendly. And of course, having a piece that is fun and that people will be laughing while we perform it is a great way to do it. And it's also a testament to what the orchestra has been about since its very beginnings. You know, this was really the first program that they ever played. And obviously, the pieces by Bach are very serious pieces, part of the classical canon. And adding this piece by PDQ Bach is just a fun element that continues to exist in all of our performances to this day.
Well, I think it's great that you went on record as saying who your favorite composer is, because now I want to ask you, what attracts you to Johann Sebastian Bach's music so much?
Before being a conductor, I was a pianist. I still play piano from time to time, but I don't have really much time to practice, so I don't do it in public anymore. And so I grew up, when you're a pianist, you start, many times you start with the music of Bach, the Anna Magdalena book that he wrote. And that was one of the first pieces I learned with my father. So I grew up playing the music by Bach. And of course, as you progress, you go into the two voice inventions and then the three voice symphonias and then eventually the well-tempered clavier and so forth. So I grew up playing Bach, but I think many musicians, we are just in awe of what Bach was able to do, because a lot of his music has a counterpoint. And of course, the well-tempered clavier is preludes and fugues. And fugues are such a very exacting genre, because obviously you have a theme that will be sung or played by many different voices, and then you will have the counterpoint. And for somebody to be able to have 3, 4, 5, 6 different musical lines going at the same time that make sense with each other, but also make sense individually, it is just an amazing accomplishment. And we know that he was able to improvise fugues on the spot. I mean, there's a famous anecdote when he he was given this theme by a prince, and he wrote his musical offering. And it's just amazing that somebody would be able to improvise a fugue. But the ones that he did not improvise, the ones that he wrote down, if you analyze them, they are just genius. Like, for somebody to have that kind of mind, this is almost like a scientific, almost like a math equation of in a way, when you write a fugue, when you write a counterpoint. But the most amazing thing is that the music is so beautiful. It's not like you're listening to this very dry, brainy music. It is very intellectual, but he is also very human, and there's both that intellect and the emotional part that you hear every time you perform his music. And his output, if you look at anything, like all of the great choral works, all of the great instrumental works, secular music, church music, everything, he really wrote in so many different styles that I don't think there's any other composer that comes even close to his achievement.
My guest today is conductor Andres Franco, music director of the Signature Symphony, and we're discussing the upcoming 40th anniversary concert taking place this weekend. I'm Jason Heilman in for Rich Fisher. One of the pieces on this concert this weekend, you've been talking about keyboard music. One of the pieces by Johann Sebastian Bach on this Saturday's concert features the keyboard very prominently with some other instruments, the Fifth Brandenburg Concerto.
Yeah, and being a pianist, and I play the keyboard. I never played this concerto, but it is a great piece. Actually, the three pieces we are playing by Bach are somewhat connected. Mm. The orchestral suites and the Brandenburg Concerto were written in the same period of time when he was working at Antalkotten, and he did not have to write church music because it was not required. They couldn't actually use music in the church services. So he was able to basically focus on instrumental music during this period of time. And he wrote the orchestral suites, the Brandenburg Concerti, the Well-Tempered Clavier, the Inventions, the Symphonias, the French suites, the English suites, as well as the cello suite. So, he basically focused on instrumental music. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the pieces that he wrote during this time. We know that Bach had to go to Berlin to pick a harpsichord for this court he was working at. And while he was in Berlin, he played for one of the rulers of Brandenburg, who was very interested in Bach's music. And there's a very interesting story of, how political things that happen, and sometimes even personal things that happen in the lives of rulers, of political leaders, affect the output of a composer. So Bach was working very happily for Leopold in Antalkotten, and he got married to a woman who did not like music at all. So Bach realized that his days there were counted, so he sent the six of his best compositions. He wrote them again by hand. He bound them in a single volume, and he sent them to Brandenburg. That was sort of his resume, just trying to get a job in Brandenburg. That never happened. But that's how Bach came to be known as the Brandenburg Concerti. And we're going to be playing number five, which features the harpsichord prominently. So I think the fact that Bach was able to focus on instrumental music, and probably the fact that he had access to this beautiful two-keyboard instrument in Antalkotten, was instrumental in him writing this concerto. The concerto is also written for a trio of soloists, so there's going to be also a flute and a violin besides the harpsichord. But even though all the three are equals, I think the harpsichord in this particular concerto is first among equals, because there's a very extended cadenza that is just for the keyboard. And back then, keyboard concertos were not, Bach himself wrote a lot of keyboard concertos, but in their Baroque period, you find many other instruments being more important, like the violin, Vivaldi concertos, even the cello, the mandolin. The keyboard concertos were not as prominent as they would become during the classical period and the romantic period as well. And I think this Brandenburg V shows really what the harpsichord could do. And it has a very special place in the literature.
Well, let's hear a little bit about that piece now that you've talked about it. This is the opening of the Fifth Brandenburg Concerto by Johann Sebastian Bach.
Thank you.
That was the fifth Brandenburg Concerto by Johann Sebastian Bach. That piece features prominently into the Signature Symphony's concert this weekend. I'm sitting down with conductor Andres Franco. I'm Jason Heilman in for Rich Fisher. So that's a very well-known piece, too. That's one of those Bach pieces that people are going to be very familiar with, I think, already coming to this concert.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's also very interesting that the pieces we will be playing by Johann Sebastian Bach in this concert are all in D major.
Yes.
And so the piece that will actually open the concert is his Overture number 3. And here I have to make a note because people have asked me, like, is it going to be exactly the same program as the very first concert? And the answer is yes, for the most part. Back when the Tulsa Little Symphony played this concert, they performed the entire Suite number 3 by Bach. We will be playing only the first movement, the Overture. And the suites are also known as Overtures because Bach used the first movement of the suites were all written as a French Overture. And that's what will be opening the concert, just the Overture from the Suite number 3. And that one was written around the time where, the same period when the Brandenburg was written. The other piece by Johann Sebastian that we'll be performing is his Magnificat for choir, vocal soloists, and orchestra. And I mentioned that he knew he would have to eventually move away from the court where he was working because the conditions were not as favorable anymore. And he eventually ended up moving to Leipzig. Mm-hmm. And this is where he spent the rest of his life. In Leipzig, he had to go back and focus on church music. If you look at the outputs during his Leipzig years, if you were very impressed at the list of works he wrote in Köthen, now in Leipzig, it's probably even more amazing. He wrote the St. John Passion, the St. Matthew Passion, the Mass in B minor, around 250 cantatas that he had to provide for the liturgical cycle. He was in charge of playing music for 2 churches and overseeing music for another 3 churches and working with musicians in town. He did not get very well with the local authorities, but you know, despite all of that,
yeah,
he was able to write.
About that.
Yeah, yeah, he was able to write all of this music, and the Magnificat is part of the pieces that he wrote during that time. And he had already written all of the great instrumental works, and he was really at the height of his creative power when he started writing this music. And the Magnificat, I have a personal story with that one because that was the first piece by Bach that I had a chance to conduct. I went to the Oregon Bach Festival in 2003 and worked with Helmut Rilling, who was the music director of the festival at the time. And when I went back to Texas Christian University, I was still a student at the time. The choral conductor, Ronald Shirey, told me, you know what, I know you work on Bach Magnificat with Helmut Rilling, and I love everything that Helmut does. So even though I was just a student, he said, I am going to conduct it. He was going to conduct it in an upcoming concert. And he said, I want you to conduct it instead of me. So he basically gave me all the rehearsal time he had with the choir and with the orchestra and the soloists. And I got a chance to perform the Bach Magnificat while everything I had learned at the Oregon Bach Festival was very fresh in my mind. So I still it's one of my favorite Bach pieces. Something that is beautiful about Magnificat is that it's very focused. Of course, the Passions and the Mass, these are like gigantic pieces that are a couple of hours long in some cases. Magnificat, you get all of that great writing, but in a more concentrated period of time. And some of the things that make Bach's music, especially religious music, very special is the care he takes to illustrate the text via the music. And this is something that is going to be very evident when we perform his Magnificat. There are some things like you will hear the music at the very beginning when the words are Magnificat. And then at the end, when he gets to the Amen part of the Gloria, when it says Sicut erat in principio, as it was in the beginning, he actually uses the same music he used at the beginning. So you get to hear something that you heard before. And there are so many other great examples of this way that Bach had to really describe and almost like as if he was working with musical pictures of the text. That is very apparent in all of his pieces, but in the Magnificat, because it's a shorter choral and vocal piece, is going to be even more evident.
Well, yeah, we think about Bach as classical music listeners. As an instrumental composer, we think about the Brandenburgs, we think about the orchestral suites. But really, as you said, that's a very small part of his output, and his bread and butter was really writing this church music. And that comes through, I think, in the way he approaches the chorus, doesn't it?
Definitely, yeah. You have to remember that his official title was the cantor of the St. Thomas Church in Leipzig. You know, he was not a cantor. He was more like the music director, mm-hmm. director of music. So he had to write a cantata per Sunday during the liturgical year. So he literally had to write something every single week. Mm-hmm. And of course, it could be used the following year. But, you know, 250 cantatas, that's quite amazing that he was able to write all of that. And the Passions, of course, are another very important part of his music writing, and the chorales, all the chorales that he wrote. He was a very religious man, and he wrote a lot of times at the end of his compositions to Soli Deo Gloria.
Well, you round out the concert with, well, two of the sons of Bach, one we've already talked about, but one of the actual sons of Bach, Carl Philipp Emanuel. Now, he is a very different composer in some ways from Johann Sebastian, isn't he? Let's talk about this piece, the symphony of his that's on the program.
Yeah, I think the C.P. Bach, and of course, it's very difficult to have such a last name as if you're a musician. Actually, it wasn't difficult at the time. The Bachs were known as musicians in Germany for many, many generations. So back then, it was very normal for a whole family to be dedicated to one task. And the Bachs, in many places in Germany at the time, the last name Bach was more or less, it meant musician. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't mean musician literally in German, but if you saw a Bach last name, you would assume they were musicians because he had many sons. And many of them actually went into being composers, and more people in his family were musicians as well. But yeah, the time had changed. I think Bach culminates the Baroque period. He came at this time when the Baroque period had already been going for a while. And I think Handel and Bach are sort of the peak of the Baroque period. And as it happens in the history of music and the history of art, it was now time for a change. So I think that's what is very interesting about C.P. Bach is that he is that link between the end of the Baroque period and just right before the classical period of Haydn and Mozart and early Beethoven was about to happen. And you can hear in the music is already very different. Bach's music, and to a great extent Handel's music, you hear a lot of counterpoint, you hear a lot of intricacy. It's a very complex music. And in the classical period, things became a little more simple, not simplistic, but simple. Of course, the Enlightenment was a big part of it, so everything needed to be a little more clear and a little more easy to grasp in a way. So when you compare something like Bach's Mass in B minor and you compare it to a Haydn symphony, you will hear that there has been a huge change in musical style. And C.P. Bach is one of those composers that wrote music during the change where things started becoming a little more transparent. And you're going to be hearing that definitely in the piece we're going to perform.
So if you're only familiar with Handel and Johann Sebastian Bach and then Haydn and Mozart, then Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach functions in a way as the sort of missing link that brings those two styles together.
Exactly. That's definitely C.P. Bach is going to be there somewhere in the middle.
Well, we have a little bit of that music that we can hear. This is the Sinfonia by Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach. An excerpt from a sinfonia by one of the sons of Johann Sebastian Bach, Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach. This piece features prominently on a concert this weekend by the Signature Symphony. I'm Jason Heilman in for Rich Fisher, and I'm sitting down today on Studio Tulsa with Signature Symphony conductor Andres Franco. Andres, this is an interesting program that you've put together for this, or I should say this is an interesting program that you're repeating for this concert, because it's not really music that features prominently on the programs of big symphony orchestras these days, is it?
No, and this is something that I'm very excited about because, as I said, Bach is one of my favorite composers, but I don't get to conduct Bach as much as I would like to, just because there has been a big movement in performance practice. So a lot of the Baroque music is now being performed more by specialized orchestras that perform on period instruments and that have a very, very specific goal. And symphony orchestras in general are not performing Bach's music as much as they used to. So I'm very happy that I get to conduct so many pieces by Johann Sebastian Bach, because I get to perform them every once in a while. It's not every season that we get to perform these pieces. And this also has to do with the fact that the Tulsa Little Symphony was a chamber orchestra when it started. Now the Signature Symphony is a full symphony orchestra, but the Tulsa Little Symphony was a chamber orchestra. So, of course, that changes in a way the repertoire you do, because there were no brass or percussion when it was created. And I think if you come to our concert this season, is going to be a great way to see where we started. And this concert is going to be a great example of how we started. The choir was also attached to it. We still have the Signature Chorale today. But then if you come back in April, we will be performing a piece that will show sort of the opposite of what the Bach concert is going to show, because we will be performing Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 2, Resurrection, which is a huge orchestra and needs a huge choir. So there will be probably over 100 musicians, instrumentalists on stage, and over 100 singers in the choir as well. So you will see again where we came from as a chamber orchestra, and then what it has grown into, this full symphony orchestra that is able to do anything from Bach all the way to Mahler. And if you were to look at the programs this season, anything in between Beethoven, Bernstein, Latin American music, Tchaikovsky, Amy Beach, so much variety in our season.
Well, we'll look forward to your upcoming concerts, including the 40th anniversary concert this weekend. Andres Franco, thank you for joining us today.
Well, Jason, thank you for having me.
Conductor Andres Franco speaking with us today on Studio Tulsa. Andres will be leading the Signature Symphony in its 40th anniversary concert this Saturday evening at Tulsa Community College's Van Trees Performing Arts Center. That concert recreates the very first program presented by the orchestra in February of 1979, and also features a special appearance by the ensemble's founding conductor, Barry Epperly. For more information on that performance, visit signaturesymphony.org. If you'd like to hear more of the music on this Saturday's concert, tune into my show, Classical Tulsa, this Friday at noon on our sister station, Classical 88.7. That's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. For Rich Fisher, I'm Jason Heilman. Thanks for listening to Public Radio Tulsa. We'll be right back.